Today, we are going to talk about how to build a high-performing SDR team with Chris Ritson. In part one, we will cover establishing the foundations for your team, creating a team culture and playbook that drive high performance, the three-step process for achieving long-term success. Let's dive in. Chris, welcome to the show.
Alric, it's my pleasure to be here. It really, really is.
Yeah, and I'm super excited to have you today because we have been chatting on LinkedIn for a few weeks, few months right now, and finally I can talk with you on the show, so I'm super excited about today's episode.
I've seen you, you know, around on LinkedIn for longer than a few weeks, right? Like months, years probably. Yeah, I've seen the show and a few episodes of the show. I know a few people that have been on it. They've had great things to say. So yeah, it's an honor to be here, mate. I'm really, really excited.
Today, the topic is how to build a top-performing SDR team. Glad we have you on the show because I know you have built like different teams at in the UK, and you were mentioning to me that you're also managing teams around the world. So I think having you to talk about that will be great. So we're going to talk about three topics. You said hiring, onboarding, and development. That's what you think. You said that's the foundation to have like a top-performing SDR team. Why do you think those three, they are the most important?
My belief is 99% of your problems as a leader are solved by hiring the right people in the first place, right? I work with a ton of SDR leaders. So I run a mentorship program for SDR leaders on a one-to-one basis. And a lot of the problems that they have at people level and performance level are because they've hired the wrong people in the first place. People that don't match the values of the organization. People that also don't match the values of the leader and how the leader wants to build that team. And it's never going to work if you don't have the right people in seat, right? My old football manager used to say to me, Chris, I'd rather play with, you know, 8 players out of 11 on the pitch that really, really want to be here, prepared to fight for it, and I'm coachable, than 11 players with 3 of them just don't care. And they don't want to be here, right? It's all about talent density rather than just lots of people. And so that's where it starts. And then if you've got the right people, I think it's our duty as SDR leaders and sales leaders in general to make sure that person reaches their full potential. And each individual is going to be different. Our job is not, and this is, it sounds ridiculous, right? And I always used to say this to my old boss, but I was like, my job, even though I get paid on this, is not to get the team to quota. My job is to get every single individual in the team to reach their full potential every single month. If I do that, the quota will look after itself. And you know, did I manage to do that every time? Absolutely not. I failed loads of times with loads of reps and learned lots of stuff along the way. But That was the objective ultimately for me, and part of that was, you know, starting from their first day and ramping up as quickly as effectively as possible, because I needed to prove to my leaders that, you know, the 60-70K that they've given me to invest in one more SDR, you know, as an all-in cost, wages, commission, taxes, all that stuff, I'm repaying that with a lot of thought and care, right, in the hiring process, and then a lot of effort and, you know, well, thought and effort in that ramping up process. That was the first two bits. And then I think the third bit is what most companies actually miss, right? They miss the continuous development of SDRs over long periods of time. And we see this manifest as, you know, SDRs, you know, they have a general, you know, an average tenure of 14 months at a business. You take away ramp, and that's 11 months of full, you know, productivity. 55% of SDRs hitting target each month. So that means what? You've got an SDR that's going to hit target 6 months. And that's not a great return on investment when the company's spending 60-70K on someone that year, right? So for me, how can we solve that? Well, one part of solving that is getting an SDR to be more productive for longer. How can you do that? And it's all about the how, right? Was for me, it was all about, well, I need to invest in them and make them want to stay for longer first. right? And then the second thing is how I can set up training and skill development programs that make them feel like they're actually moving forwards on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis. Because that's what I think nowadays generation wants, millennials, Gen Zs, is we just want to feel like we're moving forwards in our careers, in our lives, and we're making progress. And I think that's where a lot of SDRs get disenchanted and end up leaving. So that's why I care about those three things. That's how I think about them.
So let's go back on hiring specifically, because I think that's the biggest topic, I think, for the performance of the team. Also, like you were saying, do you remember how long it takes you to understand that hiring will be the answer generally for having a top performing team?
I put a huge amount of my career and any success that I had down to luck. And part of that was my first ever manager, right? Like I just chose a job in sales, right? I didn't think, oh, I might want a good manager, or I might want to sell a good product because that will help. I just chose that company because they offered me more money than the other company. And that was literally how I started. I just knew that I wanted sales. So I put a lot of it down to luck. And why that's important in terms of the hiring conversation is because when it was time for me to move into a leadership role, they had already taught me a huge amount of the skills that I needed to care about getting good at before I took the role. So, you know, I'd said to them a year previous to me getting promoted, I want to be a leader at this organization. And they were like, Chris, shut up, you're 23. Like, what are you talking about? Just go and sell some stuff. And then, you know, a year later, I took on my first leadership role. And I had no idea what I was doing, obviously, right, really. But in that period of time, they had given me access to being a fly on the wall in some interviews, as an example, leading some training sessions. And then they would give me very meticulous feedback on how I asked questions in the interview, what I was looking for, how I prepped the interview before I'd gone in there, how I was ensuring that I was going to get the best person on the pitch, so to speak, right, out of this group of candidates. And that was what I learned from a very, very young age in leadership, was the importance of making sure that I'm not just going into back-to-back interviews and hoping for the best, and, you know, just picking someone that I feel like I like. I'm making sure that I'm prepped and planned, and I can adequately compare one interview against another interviewee and educate a decision on whether they're going to be able to be successful within my organization. That was what helped me not just at Perkbox, but also at Peak on Tessian, and onwards from there. It's also something that I teach SDR leaders now and sales leaders now. It's like, stop doing back-to-back interviews and just asking different questions because you get tired. Like, that's not going to help you bring the best person on board. You should actually be exhausted by the time you've hired the right person, because you now know that you put all of your effort in to making sure that it's a great person, or it's likely to be a great person on board. And too many people just take punts with salespeople, and they don't necessarily need to.
Earlier, you were talking about hiring the right people. So what's your process to find the right people in terms of the skills you are looking for, but also type of questions, or maybe it can be also the way you assess the skills during the hiring process?
Another thing that I learned really, really early, And I actually stole this from the ex-England rugby coach, Clive Woodward, was... So Clive Woodward, just for context, so he won the World Cup 2003 with England. And one of his secret sources is he built something called teamship within the England rugby team. And what that basically was a playbook for how the team behaved. And I thought the concept was really, really interesting. And this was back in my sort of early days of leadership. I loved the concept. I thought it was very different from everything that I'd seen, right? In my sales days, I'd just been asked to follow a playbook of how to upload a lead and how to use a cadence and all of that sort of stuff. And I was like, that's all well and good, but how can we ensure we've got the right players on the pitch? right? Who are gonna help us at a scale, and are gonna help us, you know, in the long term. And one of the things that I've always looked for with SDRs specifically is, I don't want an SDR that is just going to be successful here over the next 12 months, right? And every business that I've ever spoken to is, you know, they say to me, Chris, we plan for SDRs to leave within 18 months. And I'm like, well, that's never been my mentality or my philosophy. My philosophy is different. It's, folks, if we really, really are going to invest in this team, then I'm not going to take it on unless we're investing in the team for the long term. And part of that investment means that we need to hire people that we can see, a potential future in at the organization in more senior roles as we grow. And now, not everyone can be promoted, but that's part and parcel of success, right? And high performance is the best and the cream will kind of rise to the top. But we've got to create an environment where that is going to, you know, be able to be fostered and able to happen. So one of the things that I created was this little playbook or little black book, right? And within that little black book was basically how I wanted the team to behave in certain situations, how I wanted the team to build a culture for themselves. And the way that I actually executed that was, I didn't write it. Right. Well, I wrote it at the end, but the way that we did it was, you know, I would hire a couple of people, had a couple of people in the team, and what I said to them was, hey, here's a topic area. How do you guys think we should behave based on this particular topic area? Like, what's, you know, how do we act? How do we behave as a team here? And that was all kinds of different situations and issues. And you know, my view is, a playbook is not an event. It doesn't just, you build it. It's not a project. It's something that is a process and that you build over a long period of time. And it's the same with a culture. So, you know, we had all kinds of different topics in there, from how do we approach diversity as a team? How do we communicate with each other when we're annoyed at each other? How do we communicate with marketing? How do we, think about KPIs? All of those things, right? Where I put them all to the team at different points. The team came back with the, you know, different answers, and then we went and hired people, you know, on the back of that. If people didn't, you know, that was the first thing I gave them. Here's a little black book. If you don't actually live up to this, unfortunately, you're not part of the team anymore. Because this is the single most important thing that I we're trying to protect here. Because if we have this high performance book and how we behave in a high performance way, then we're going to go and achieve high performance things. And it was incredible that, you know, because I gave the team the ability, I stole it from Clive Woodward, to be honest, but I gave the team the ability to make their own rules. What did they do? They lived by their own rules. Right. Yeah, sure. I signed the rules off. I wasn't like, cool, we're not going to come to work for the next 4 months. Right. But I signed them off. And then the interesting observation I made was, they then lived by their own rules. But most importantly, they held each other accountable to those rules. So then when we hired new people, those new people, based on our, you know, hiring and interview playbook that we brought in from the first day, I didn't even have to come and say to them, this is how we behave. They observed other people and senior people in the team, or people who have been there for longer, behaving in that way, right? That was something that became a thing for us, like inside and outside of the office. Like, you know, one of the rules is like, okay, if, like, I remember this really, really clearly, is one of the women in my team said, okay, there's one of the guys has you know, been a bit misogynistic, and he's put me down. I feel really uncomfortable. So my response to that was, right, we'll have a team meeting and I'm going to leave the room. You guys, I want you to figure out, how do you communicate, right, to women within the team, what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. And the second thing is, as a woman receiving that, I want you to talk about, what are the rules around how you respond to that individual in an appropriate way to sort out the issue? And they came up with it, right? But that then became a rule. And the only thing I added to it was when I came back in the room, I said, okay, well, everything here is just, you've just made it applicable to the office. I don't want to go for drinks and hear any of this stuff as well, because I know what happens after a couple of beers. You know, people get a little bit, you know, they're in a different environment and they get a little bit ahead of themselves sometimes. So these started to become behaviors that we had inside, outside the office in terms of how we treated not just other teammates, but other people around us. And it was strict, right? And it sounded strict, but they came up with them. Not me. And that was the beauty of it, right? And I totally stole it from a World Cup winning coach. But I was like, well, if it's got you a World Cup, then it can get us, you know, a bloody good SDR team. And the funny or fun thing about it on the back end was we have this concept at C-level and VPs where it's like, oh, SDRs, you know, they don't know how to behave. They don't know anything. And that was a concept that used to really annoy me and frustrate me quietly. But my job was, okay, how am I going to do something about this internally? Right? I want to create a team where, you know, the CEO and C-suite thinks this is the most mature, you know, well-rounded SDR team or department in the business, right? When we're dealing with issues and conflict and things like that. And that's what the book helps with, right? The book helps teach all of the reps how to deal with conflict, how to communicate when you're frustrated, how to approach someone and have a one-to-one conversation, regardless of their job title. And, you know, we had reps, sometimes, you know, they broke some of the rules. And if they were doing it unconsciously because they thought it was the right thing, all right, I'll give you a second chance. That's fine. I'll tell you I'm disappointed, but I'll give you a second chance. If you're consciously breaking the rules and just doing that to go outside the rest of the team, that's when I've got an issue with it. And that was my job. That was it. It wasn't to build the playbook. It was to manage the playbook.
I think the way you're doing it, you give them ownership also on that. And so they are really aligned with this decision, because if it was you creating the rules or creating everything, that will be you trying to sell this to them and say, hey, why? That's why I think we should do this. And here, it's not the case. It's you give them, hey, what do you think we should do here? And they come up with a solution. And so if they do it, they will be aligned with it versus you trying to sell that to them.
Exactly, right? Like, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges I see sales leaders ask me is, how can I get people to do their activity every day? Every day, I'm chasing them every day. And I used to have the same challenge. And as soon as I flipped it on its head and made KPIs and made activity part of the book, and what I linked it to was, because it was a behavioral book, I linked it to things like ownership, accountability, and effort. And it was, you know, it all came down to this, like, all right, if we want to achieve our vision, and all I did was bring them back to our vision. I always set a vision for the team. My vision, one of the teams as an example, was I want us to be a world-recognized SDR function and win an award for that, right? Like that's what I want. And I would always just ask them the question, you know, if they were struggling with something, I'd say, okay, do you think this will help us achieve the vision, the objective? And sometimes it was yes, sometimes it was no. But once you brought it back to that bigger vision for people, then it became easier for them to understand why they needed to commit today, tomorrow, the day after, the day after, and the day after. And sure, that was like at team level. And absolutely, you know, to my other point, you have to understand the individual in front of you. But one of my rules for people, one of the things that I always, you know, cared a lot about was, everything we do here is going to be in the team's best interests first and then your best interest second. And I was very upfront and clear about that with everyone. You know, it doesn't mean they can't have personal goals and we can't go and achieve them. Your personal goals and objectives, whatever they are, they are not going to come in the way of us as a team moving in the right direction. And I was very open with them about saying, look, sometimes that will be the case, right? sometimes your personal objective is to be an account executive this year, and we don't have an open role this year. And that's an example of when your personal goal will cross over with the team's objective. When that happens, or when that's, you know, potentially going to happen, my job is to see it coming, be honest with you about it, manage your expectations, and then encourage you to make a decision for yourself. And that doesn't mean you need to stay. It absolutely doesn't. And I was always so honest with you, my top performers. Like, it doesn't mean you need to stay, right? It means that this is the situation and I will support whatever decision you need to make. I was always shocked at how many people bought back into the longer term goal and bought in for longer because of the team and the journey that they were going on with the team, as opposed to just their own stuff. And sometimes, yeah, people dropped off for sure. And that happened. And I made loads of mistakes, you know, to get to that point, and lost lots of good people because of those mistakes at certain points. But it was weird flipping things on its head and almost letting the team self-govern, but me had the kind of like final say if it needs to get to that point.
If we go back to the topic on if I had a question or hey, what you can do. So I really like your approach on that. On my side, what we do is add two things. One is trying, like you said, understand the personal goal first, because each person, they are motivated by something different. It can be professional goal, meaning that, like you said, moving to a new role, or it can be like, for example, buying a house, if it's like one of their main goal. Because obviously what you want to understand is why they're in sales, because we know in sales you can definitely tie your commissions to your personal goals. What you want to travel this year, for example, how much money do you need? And so let's do the math on how many, how much do you need to save per month to get to this? And the second thing is also showing them the math behind the KPIs, because I was struggling earlier in my career when you get high, you need to hit 100 activities or 200 per day, and they don't say why. They say, oh yeah, you need to hit that. And they you don't have any explanation. So I have a spreadsheet that we use to explain why, but also if you don't do it, here's the impact of it for you and your personal commissions, for example, because yes, your conversion rate may be, I don't know, it's a certain percentage. Maybe you need to send less activities than someone else because you are really good on the phone, for example. But here's the impact of where if you don't hit your KPIs, the impact at the end of the month on your commission, because each activity is going to lead to closer to your full quota or maybe exceed your quota. But I'm not here to just say, hey, you need to hit your activities, because for the sake of activities, it's here's why. What's happening if you don't do it, or is it not going to help you achieve your personal goals? So
one of the things to me was I have this three-step process that I get reps I talk to managers, SDR leaders about it now. Is the first part of the process is vision. What is the vision? Not just for the team, but at an individual level, what's the vision of that individual for the, you know, where do they want to be in 5-10 years time? And I want to know that. And I used to sit down with each member of the team, and I would get them as homework to go and in detail write down where they are going to be in 10 years time, or what they really, really want to do if they're being completely honest. And that can absolutely change. And we used to redo this sort of every 6 to 12 months. But what that gave me was it gave me a really, really clear understanding of where that person wanted to go and whether this job is actually going to help them get there or not, right? Because if someone doesn't see this job as helping them get to their ultimate goal of success, which is what I think a lot of people do, one or whatever is going to make them happy, then they're not going to work very hard at it. So then when you ask them to work hard with KPIs and KPI calculators, they disregard that because they can't see why it's going to help them in this 5-10 years time. The challenge is most people aren't actually honest with you in the first place about it, or they just don't really know. That's why I try to get people to think about like longer term rather than just this shorter term. What's your goal now? Is it buy a house, right? What's the longer term goal here from your career perspective? Like, I get those goals. That's fine. They're good goals. but I care like 10 years time, I want to set you up for that sort of success in this position. Now the second step is what I call like work hard, but the work hard bit, work hard / commit. The commit part is right now I've got your vision and I understand like what's going to make you commit when it's really, really shit, right? And you fail and fail and fail and fail and fail. You're going to win games, you're going to lose games, you're going to win days, you're going to lose days. What's going to keep you in the game? What's going to keep you in the game is your passion for achieving your longer term vision and feeling like, you know, even though today, you know, knocked you down a little bit, you're still on the road to eventually getting there. And that was the commit part. And that, you know, when I knew where someone wanted to go and they were clear, it was incredible how much harder they worked every single day when I explained this is a compound interest game, right? And it all stacks up into getting there. But I, as a leader, had to tie those two things together. That was the key. It was like passion, aka vision, and then persistence, let's work hard, commit. And the third part was this like obsession.
Could you give an example of, because you said they have their vision for the long term, and now how do they give that to you? So the way they create their system.
You know, so a lot of reps will turn around to you and say, okay, I want to be a CRO or a VP sales, right? Or I want to be a CEO and an entrepreneur, right? So my job there is okay, if that's what you like really, really, really want for yourself and you're being 100% honest with me, okay, then how do we take that, you know, that 10-year piece all the way back to how today you can take one step closer to getting there? And that's what got people to think, oh, well, I'm not going to take one step closer to getting there if I don't work very hard or I don't commit to this. And that's what I used to say, is like, as soon as your vision changes and I also had this, right? Was like one of my best reps ever turned around to me and said, Chris, I want to be a doctor. And I was like, all right, like, well, just if that is your, you know, and I went back to this framework. I was like, look, Cleo, it's just called Cleo. I was like, Cleo, if you want to be a doctor, you know, that is a completely different vision for your future than the one that we originally have spoken about and are currently working towards. And what I need you to think about is how this SDR role that you're doing right now is going to help you achieve your vision, because that's my job. I'm not going to convince you that or try to sell this to you. Like that you are, and I always used to say this to reps, is you are the CEO of your own career. You make every decision and the book starts and ends with you. And that gave them the power to be honest with me and tell me exactly what they wanted, what they were going to do. And with that, like, you know, she ran away, she had a weekend with her parents, and, you know, I knew exactly what the conversation was going to be, was, yeah, I need to go and apply to go back to university. And I was like, yeah, I know. I'm surprised you didn't tell me last week. But it is about her learning that for herself and working it out for herself, right? She was still nervous telling me, because she felt like she was letting the team down. But my piece was always like, right, well, when your vision isn't in line with that, then actually what letting the team down would be you not knowing why you're doing this anymore and therefore not working as hard as you used to and not achieving those results. So, you know, she understood that. And yeah, granted, I lost one of my best reps that day, right? But that was, you know, she's now still at university. I think she's in her final year. And she's going to go and be a doctor there, right? And that's her vision and that's it. But that was what I used to take SDRs back to. Cool, you want to be an entrepreneur when you're older. Well, tell me how SDR is going to help you do that. Well, it's going to help me build soft skills like resilience, hard skills like outbounding, generate sales. And now they understand why they're doing it. and so they commit to the day-to-day. And it's this philosophy of like thinking decades, acting minutes sort of thing. But my job was to get them to think in decades and be really, really honest about it and then act in minutes so they make really good decisions today to hit these monthly goals and quarterly goals that we constantly feel the pressure of, right? The final bit is this obsession with learning.
That's the third step then.
That's the third step. So there's a ton of research on like what makes people high performance in any career. So you've got that passion for something, so the vision. You've got the persistence, so the commit and the work rate. But one thing I've always felt that was missing was an obsession with learning and being better. And especially in an SDR environment where I've seen people stagnate a lot because, in sales, you hit your target once and you're like, I've done it. And then what happens? Like the graph kind of looks like this, right? You see it again and again and again and again. And my thing with the team and with each individual is like that you're all going to have slightly different results come the end of the month, but you're not comparing and we don't have a leaderboard here for that, right? And I didn't have a leaderboard at the last two organizations. Instead, I had a consistent improvement board and an obsession with learning board, what we used to do is we used to look at who has improved the most month over month and who is, and who is being the most consistent, right? And by shouting out those things and being obsessed with those things, what did the reps do, right? They invested in learning, right? They did extra courses. They did external coaching, were extremely attentive internally as well in terms of learning and development, only helped them be consistently better. We ran one-to-ones in a weird way compared to most businesses. So like everyone says, yeah, let the reps run the one-to-ones. Well, we let the reps run the one-to-ones, but before they ran the one-to-one, they had to go and analyze their performance before they did, rather than just come in and say, where do you need to improve? And they're like, whole course, right? Like they would look at all their numbers, interpret it, and I would teach them how to do that, like as a hard skill. Then they'd come in and I'd say, cool, walk me through what you've tried this week, what you tested, how did it go? What are you going to do next week on the back of it? And they would have prepped that. And we did that through an initiative called, we banned activity for 1 hour a week. So I banned all reps from doing any activity for 1 hour a week. It was usually Monday morning. And they had to, instead, they allocated that time to looking at their performance from the previous week. Because it's all well and good having a vision, working really, really hard. But if you never take the time to observe and learn from your what you've done well and what you've done badly, then you're not going to move anywhere very quickly, slash you're going to make lots and lots more mistakes. And our job as a leadership team was to try and reduce that. The only way to do it was to teach the reps how to figure it out.
And the thing with doing that with them also is you are coaching them actually doing that because you don't want to be the one giving the answer.
Exactly.
People, they can figure out on their own what they need to focus on, not just giving them the answer.
Yeah, exactly. And the reps used to, I think what's interesting is the reps, they would say things like, I want to be more data driven. And then people say, salespeople need to be more data driven. It's like, well, how do we give them that skill? Well, you tie it into high performance and you tie it into how they can analyze their own performance. Because that's ultimately what it is, right? It's just making better decisions or more educated decisions. They're not going to do it if you just say, cool, how many meetings did you book last week? 10. That's great. Well, how did you manage to do that? Well, I don't know, really. A couple of cold calls? Okay, right. Did you hit your dials? Yeah, I hit my dials. Right, great. They're unable to associate what's winning and losing when we as leaders ask those sort of high-level questions. We have to remember that we're asking those questions because we're nervous about our dashboard and our commission. And that's what ties all the way back to that first point for me, which is my piece as a leader, or my thing as a leader is like, your job is to get everyone to reach their full potential. And if you do, and that's your actual mission, then the rest kind of looks after itself because you end up building these initiatives that the team learn, the team generates build skills, the team want to stay and work with you for longer than 14 months. The team are patient when it comes to AE promotions or whatever, right? And it's this snowball effect kind of goes from that.
you are talking about not using dashboard, and I think that's the right thing because the dashboard is more for you than for them generally to see how we are pacing. The thing that you were talking about earlier about focusing on the things they are learning or doing, I think that's the right thing because if you're focusing on the behavior, and like you said, if we go back to what you said about the team behavior, if we are doing the right thing, we are going to hit the number versus just focusing just on the number. Because if we don't hit quota, there is an issue, obviously. But what's happening? Are we doing the right things? Are we focusing on the right leads for the right ACP? I think the list could be big, but the fact that you are focusing on what they are doing, you are reinforcing the right things instead of, hey, we should do more. No, you're already doing the right things. That's what we should do more, actually. Chris, we are at the end already. I think we need to do another episode, I think, because we didn't cover everything. I'm still curious to understand, based on what you said here about the behavior of your team, how you use that then in interviews, how you look for this specifically, because here it's generally the way I've seen that from other companies is based on soft skills and the need of the business, if it's like a new SDR team or maybe a more advanced. So we'd love to record another episode, maybe in April, if you want.
Yeah, we could do this as part one, part two, if you want.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That was, I think, a great intro of top performing team. So,
yeah, no worries. Yeah, it's I know it's probably slightly different approach. I was always just like very obsessed with how do we create the right behaviors and culture here to foster everything else. In order to do that, you need to bring the team into it to create it. It can't just be what you write down and say this is what's going to happen. Like, sure, there's going to be certain parts of it are going to be around your core beliefs as the leader. Like for me, a big believer in like hard work, right? Otherwise, you're just not going to get very far. It's got to be all about them. That has to be all about them. That's the commit, I think. But thank you so much for having me. It's been great, mate. I've really enjoyed having a chat about this stuff. Brings back lots of memories as well. Just loads of examples and lots of stories. But this was great fun.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks everyone for listening to this video today. And like I said, we are going to have a second episode. We'll chat after the recording just to see when we can record another episode. But thank you so much. That was super interesting. Can't wait for the second episode.
Yeah, no worries.
If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So for Spotify, to leave a review, what you can do is you can use your phone, then go on the Spotify app, then you go to the SDR Game page, and then at the top of the page, you can leave a review. It's a 5-star review if you enjoyed the episode, obviously. And then if you are listening to this episode on Apple Podcasts, feel free also to leave a review on your app. Thanks for listening, and I see you on the next episode.